I feel the need, guys.
The need
for speed.
Ow!
Ow! Let's go to the danger zone.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Talk, a movie podcast. We are your go-to source for ratings and recommendations of past and present films. I am your host, Wes Jones, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Hey, this is Tommy, podcasting straight from Nashville, Tennessee.
The movie buddy Conway, podcasting from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
All right, guys. Welcome back. Real Talk, a movie podcast. I feel like we've been gone a long time. Wes is doing this insurance thing now, and, you know, we don't get to hang out as much as we used to. So we, you know, we are using our time valuable tonight here at Real Talk, a movie podcast. I had suggested it. This is one of my top five most anticipated films of this year. I decided I'm a little kid because Jurassic Park and Fantastic Beast also make that list. So I'm like a 13-year-old boy. But no, I was just at this wedding and I was the only, me and Jamie Bowler, one of my other childhood friends, were one of the only two people that weren't pilots. And they were talking about that they're renting out a whole theater for this movie. So it kind of got me in the mood. It's getting ready to come out. And so I'm pretty pumped about it. And I think I told T-Man the other day that this is one of my second most watched films. So I guess I just really like Rotten Tomatoes, like 59% films. Those are my top, you know, those are my favorite type movies. So, Tommy, without further ado, are you excited to talk some Top Gun? Hop on in here, man.
Yeah, man, I'm psyched. You know, I'm a lifelong Tommy Cruise fan. And, you know, Top Gun has honestly never been one of my favorite of his. But rewatching it just the other day, it really kind of made me appreciate it more than I have in the past because of its goofy kind of no holds barred spirit. And I'm really excited for this new one. I'm pretty positive it's going to be pretty awesome. And so, yeah, I can't wait to get into it and just talk about all the crazy 1980s reminiscent stuff that we got to talk about, especially that volleyball scene. Can't wait to talk about some volleyball.
I thought you were going to say that guy keeps spilling his coffee. But yeah, that volleyball scene in jeans, man. Lots of chafing going on there.
Oh, man.
Well, without further ado, let's bring in Wes here. Wes, you said Top Gun was one of your most watched movies as well. Are you excited to talk some Maverick and Iceman?
Gabe, I want some butts. my most recent rewatch of Top Gun, that's my favorite character, is the I want some butts guy. And he's the one that also keeps spilling his coffee. So, yeah, that's how I'm feeling tonight, Gabe. I just want some butts.
I can't believe you've switched. Like, ever since I've known you, like, the quote that you say the most from Top Gun to me is, Slatter, you stink.
Well, here's the thing, Gabe. You know, when we were younger, we always identified with, you know, the hotshot pilots, you know, the guys really getting into it. But as we're approaching middle age, you know, now we, you know, we really appreciate, you know, just that middle-aged, you know, middle management type guy that's got the coffee. It's always spilling it on himself. And these hotshots are always getting on his damn nerves.
That's who we are. We're grumpy middle-aged men trying to just drink our coffee. That's me this morning. My kids are jumping all over me, and I almost yelled out, I want some butts, but I didn't.
You know, you should have, Gabe. You should have.
I'm just trying to drink my coffee. Yeah, I think I identify with this guy the more I think about it. Now,
he is the unsung hero of the movie in a lot of ways, honestly.
You know, that guy is always drinking his coffee as the planes are landing, though.
I mean, he can never drink it. No, he never drinks it, though.
That's why he's on. That's why he's on edge. He can't get that fix. He's craving caffeine. He's upset. And he just can't get that coffee fix.
Yeah,
he never can. I really hope the sequel is built around him. You know, that's kind of what I'm
hearing. It ends. The sequel ends with him finally getting a full sip of coffee, or it's just him sitting down drinking his coffee.
Just sitting down. They built a $150 million franchise around this guy. Awesome. I can't wait.
What if whenever you know, we go see Maverick, what if he's still doing that same trick? You know, Maverick, and so he's much. He's 60 years old. He's still buzzing, you know, the towers and making right. people spill coffee on us. It's like he just never
you know
grown out.
He is. You know he is. Like, Hollywood don't have any, they don't have new ideas. They're like, you know, that buzzed the tower. That really worked in late 80s. Let's bring it back.
I just hope it ends with that guy drinking his coffee. Everybody else is like, what the heck is going on? And I'm just sitting there clapping. I'm like, he did it.
That's a nice touch there. That's a way to cap Maverick. Just that guy sitting back enjoying his coffee finally.
Well, let's kick this off, guys. You know, I think for this episode, we've done some fun stuff like this in the past. Let's just go by our call signs. So here's what I'm going to do. You guys come up with a call sign, kind of resembles you, is the core of who you are, and we'll go about the rest of the episode. What do you say? So let me kick it over to Tommy. What do you feel like your call sign should be?
That's, you know, it's a good question. It's tough. There's a lot of great call signs, but you know, if I really got to be who the core I am as a person, it would have to be Maverick. You know, first off, me and Tom Cruise share a lot of listen to me, Gabe.
The best character in the movie.
Share a lot of similarities. The main lead star character. I like it. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of, Maverick is kind of, he's uncontrollable. You know, he's got really high highs. He's got true talent, but he can also, you know, kill his partner at any given second. I feel like that's me on this podcast. I can bring some of the best material ever, but then also get thrown off multiple times with many of the fans trying to overthrow me on the podcast and kick me off. So I feel like I resemble Maverick in a lot of ways.
Okay, I see what you're going for now. When you were saying, I was like, are you carrying the podcast or are you the biggest action star of the 90s? I didn't know where you were going with that.
That's only in my head, guys. That's only in my head. See, okay. Maverick's got a big ego. That's kind of like me. So I feel like there's a lot of similarities there.
All right. I'll give you that one. I'll let you have it today. I'll call you Maverick just for this episode, not in real life.
All right. All right. Okay. And in real life. Great. Great deal.
We'll see. All right, Wes, what call sign screams Wes Jones?
It's a good question. You know, we've already taken off the main character with T-Man, who's now Maverick. You know, I think I've got to go Ice. I got to go Val Kilmer, got to go a little Iceman. Would really like to be called Ice the rest of this episode. And, you know, I'll do a little bit like T-Man. Of course, you got Ice is supposed to be precise, right? You know, you guys make fun of me because I've got the spreadsheets out, you know, to tally up the fan votes. I've got outlines for episode, you know, I have all that type of stuff. And then he's also in a way kind of like a villain, can kind of be an ass sometimes, like all of those types of things too. And I mean, that kind of fits me as well.
I like it. It really does, Wes, to the T. You know, and the great thing is, at the end of the day, even though we're rivals throughout the podcast, we always come to a resolution and we're like, you know what? We're great wingmen together.
Right. I'll say, at the end of this episode, I can be like, Maverick, I'll be your podcast man anytime, or your podcast partner anytime. something along that.
Yeah.
We can come together.
Nice.
And just for the betterment of the podcast going forward.
I love it, man. We've got a great two characters. Now, Gabe, I think we should just pick you, though.
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, wait a minute. This is completely ridiculous. Tommy picked the biggest action star of the 90s. And then Wes follows it up by the guy that every girl in my high school was, like, in love with, you know, within that volleyball scene. So you guys clearly have picked, like, the iconic two characters. And
no,
now
it has nothing to do with that, Gabe. It's true. You asked us who we think we are as characters, and just were honest. And now let us be honest.
And now you're
going
to sign off to the podcast with with I'll be your wingman anytime you guys are going to do this malarkey as you sign off. Where does that leave me, T-Man?
Well, let us pick, you know, let us pick you. And Wes, I think you'll agree with this. We just have to go to who Gabe is to the core in Top Gun. And it's got to be Merlin. Let's be honest here, guys.
What the? Yeah, Merlin?
That's exactly who I was thinking.
Is that who you were thinking, Wes?
Got to be Merlin. Like, there's no one else it could be. Not Goose, not Slider.
Wait a minute, I play piano. I can sing Great Balls of Fire. I can't be Goose.
You don't have Goose energy, man. You're not Goose. You're not Goose. You're more like a Merlin type. You love dragons. You love fantasy. And what the hell was Merlin doing at the end of that movie? Remember all those fight scenes that he's just like looking around the cockpit?
Yeah. He's freaking out. He's not in control. He's wide-eyed. He's got moons on his helmet. I mean, that's moons on your helmet.
Definitely, Gabe. Definitely. Your first pilot, your first podcast partner died or they just quit, right? And then you just, you know, then you come on. I love it.
So you guys get to be the dang front pilot that does everything cool. And I have to be one of those back pilots. We're going to talk about this later on in the episode. I don't even know what those things do. There's a scene where that guy loses steering control. And you would think the back pilot's job would be able to steer in the plane when your regular pilot can't handle it. But he can't. It's just like a fake steering wheel back there, like one of those little kid steering wheels. I don't know what's going on. Like, that's who you're giving me?
Do you remember when Goose's face is like whenever the plane's starting to spin out of control and he's got both of his hands up and his face just kind of pressed against the window as the plane's going? That's what happens. When the main pilot can't control the plane anymore, the guy in the back, that's the type of stuff that he does.
He just does
I am. So basically, you two are guiding this podcast. I'm just sitting in the back and have no control.
But you have a moon painted on your helmet.
That is true. And I do like magic.
See, it fits, man. Yep. Hey, and you know what? Me, Wes and I aren't trying to be, you know, mean or anything. We're just trying to get to the core of who we are as podcasters. And I think we've nailed it, guys.
Freaking Merlin. I'm freaking
all right, Merlin. What we got next?
All right. Well, I'll prove you guys not true Top Gun fans next. You guys claim to know a lot about Top Gun. You made me freaking Merlin. I've got a question for both of you, and I'm going to hit you guys right in the teeth. What is Goose's real name?
Anthony Edwards.
No, not the actor. What's his actual name in the movie?
Oh, dang. I don't know.
I don't either, honestly.
And I've never proclaimed to be a Top Gun expert here. I just got to put that out there.
Well, that's okay. Just so you know, it's not said once during the movie, but his name in the movie you finally see in the credits is Nick Bradshaw.
I wasn't even in the same ballpark or even same planet as Nick Bradshaw. I was thinking Kazansky or something. I think myself says that in the movie at some point.
All right.
Nice. Yeah. That's a good one, Gabe.
I thought I'd make
his name's Merlin.
Silly.
Oh, Merlin. Sorry, Merlin. Merlin's using his sorcery on us. I can feel it.
All right. I'm going to talk about something we've already talked about. I'm just going to ask you another question. So is Tommy Cruise, and this is a question for both of you guys, is he the biggest blockbuster movie star of all time? I really started thinking about it when I was setting this up. I was like, you know, let's obviously not count Brendan Fraser in 1999's The Mummy because,
that's definitely number one.
Yeah. But then, I mean, think about it. All the Mission Impossibles, we got Top Gun, we got Days of Thunder, really anything with a vehicle. He was the man for a while there. We got Last Samurai. We got Jack Reacher, Edge of Tomorrow, Oblivion. Is Tommy Cruise the biggest blockbuster movie star of all time?
Yeah, it's a great question, Gabe. Oh, man, I wasn't prepared for this. But I think he's definitely in the running of greatest movie star of all time, for sure. Like, he's had a 35-year run, which has been one of the more unprecedented runs ever as an A-list movie star. You know, if you look at all his contemporaries, pretty much all his contemporaries are retired, doing direct-to-video, or barely acting anymore. And Tom Cruise is still leading A-list, A-plus franchises in Hollywood, pretty much by himself. You know, he's the main attraction in those, doing all those stunts. Now, your question is around, is he the biggest action star of all time? Man, I don't know. Is that your main question, Gabe?
Yeah, is he the biggest blockbuster or action star of all time? I don't know if you want to term. You know, I don't know how to term the question, but you know what I'm getting at.
I don't think I would call him the biggest action star. I feel like action specifically, maybe Arnold Schwarzenegger, throughout his career has maybe been the biggest action star. But I mean, because Tom Cruise, Arnold does not do drama. Now, no, Tom Cruise, trying. On the other hand, you know, like look at A Few Good Men. I mean, that's one of my favorite movies. And I mean, he's amazing in that.
Yeah.
So,
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. I mean, The Last Samurai, I know it's got a lot of action, but it's got a lot of drama to it as well.
And Tom Cruise does a lot of his own stunts. Not a lot of people do that. I don't even know if Arnold does his own stunts.
Not to the level that Tom has. And Tom's kind of had a really interesting career because it's kind of been like in three phases. It's kind of like the, here's how I would segment it out. You got the young Tom Cruise kind of working with all these A-list auteurs, like, and that's where Top Gun is, building his name. You've got the, that lasts till probably like 92. You've got the A-plus biggest number one movie star in the world from like 91 to like 2005. Until his infamous couch jumping goes down a little bit. Hey, if you're an A-list, you got to have some crazy event. That's what we've learned from Will Smith smacking Chris Rock, right? And then he kind of resurrected himself where a lot of actors would kind of just implode. He resurrected himself as kind of like an A-plus level action star.
You know, he tried. He tried to be Brendan Fraser in The Mummy, but it didn't work out.
Well, that's one of his rare misses, yeah. And that's the thing. Now, since probably 2010-ish, he's been probably the biggest action star in Hollywood. To your point, Gabe, you know, he stars mainly the past 10, 12 years in action movies. And they're all usually successful.
It helps that the Mission Impossible movies, I mean, I think they're the best now that they ever have been. Like the last two I've absolutely loved, and I think they've been the best of the series. And that's one of my – well, it was one of my top five and most anticipated movies of the year was the newest Mission Impossible, but I believe they've moved that to 2023 now.
Yeah, dead right.
Wes really likes those new Mission Impossibles, but what he really craves is that Mission Impossible 2. He comes over sometimes. He's like, Wes, Gabe, I just want to watch some Tom Cruise cliff jumping. I don't have that movie, Wes, but he says it's his favorite.
I want some slow motion spinning with doves and and a bunch of it was basically Face Off with the Mission Impossible characters is basically what Mission Impossible 2 is.
It was ridiculous, but it was very successful. And that's the thing is, you know, he's had a lot. Tom Cruise, another thing that's helped him, I think, is he has a pretty good track record for movies. Like, a lot of his movies are good. He doesn't really make many bad movies, which helps a lot. And, you know, even this Top Gun movie, from everything I'm reading on the internet, it says it's pretty great. So I think he's still in that A-list action star. Like I said, I think he's probably the biggest action star in Hollywood. I know some people would say maybe The Rock or Vin Diesel, but I think Tom Cruise just makes better films than them.
Oh, yeah. They can't really act. Vin Diesel can act and play like one character.
One note.
And then he can also cut a heck of an album.
Oh, no, he's a hell of a pop star. I will agree with that.
Now, bar none, the best.
And what's amazing about Tom Cruise, and I'm glad we're having this conversation, is the guy is 59 years old, and he's doing this. At 59, I don't know where I'll be. Maybe in a nursing home or something. But
I feel 59 now.
Wes, yeah.
He on that Tom Brady diet? I mean, he's great.
I know, he looks great. He flew a freaking helicopter onto an aircraft carrier or battleship for the Top Gun 2 premiere by himself. I mean, he's a living legend. And I think more people, we need to appreciate Tom Cruise because he's really kind of the last there is. He's kind of the last of an era of this like super, super A-list, you know, action kind of doing it his own way. Like, I don't know if there's anybody else like him really in Hollywood.
Look,
I wouldn't call him the last movie star because, and you know where I'm going with this. I think our last true movie star that we have left is Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, he is a different type of movie star than what Tom Cruise is and, you know, the choices that they make and stuff like that. But I feel like as of now, he seems to be our last movie star.
You know, I would put him in different. That's why I didn't say movie star. I said kind of Tom Cruise is doing his own thing. If you look at Tom Cruise, He basically, where Leonardo DiCaprio, who's a great actor and a great movie star, if you notice what he does is he stars with a lot of great directors in a lot of really high, you know, usually really good movies. Scorsese, you know, the top directors there are, and kind of more prestige. He doesn't do what Tom Cruise is doing, which what Tom Cruise does is basically he is the movie. There's usually no other stars in it. Like, if you guys notice, the last 15 to 20 years, Tom Cruise does not star with other stars. It's literally just Tom Cruise. He makes the movie. He's basically the director. He produces all of his movies. He basically works with one or two directors now. Like, Christopher McQuarrie is, like, his guy now. Joseph Kosinski, his other guy. And he basically just makes the movie, and it's him. It is the Tom Cruise movie, the Tom Cruise production. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's really nobody else like him that does what he does. And honestly, I don't think there is anybody that could do what he does in Hollywood. So that's why I think he's kind of the last of his breed in that way.
I don't think people are capable of doing that type of stuff, because, you know, generally you have people that specialize in a certain area, and they just don't seem to be able to, you know, manage big productions while also acting in them, helping the directors, doing the stunts. They can't. You have to find a special talent in order to do all of those things and have an interest in basically building an empire, which is really what he's done. Now, you'll notice a lot, you know, DiCaprio and Brad Pitt and several of those other ones that were, you know, at the heights of Hollywood and in some regards still are, you know, they have a lot of producer credits and stuff like that. But I just don't know that they're doing the type of stuff on set that Tom Cruise is doing. They're more or less just collecting an extra check.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly my point. Is like Tom Cruise, it's like he makes the movie. Like he is the producer. It's his movie. He is, and this is what I've read, you know, even though he's not the director, it's his vision. The movies are his vision and kind of his thing that he's created. And that's why he works with specific directors, writers over and over again, because it's much more of like a collaborative experience. So, yeah, it's pretty cool and pretty amazing. I'm still just, you know, kind of appreciative that we still have somebody like that doing these type of risks out there.
And he does his own stunts. But I think that you don't have Tom Cruise if you don't have somebody with his crazy energy that he has, his couch jumping. You've got to have a bold personality to fill those shoes. And we just don't have actors that are that, I guess, energetic anymore.
Well, no. And also, like, you know, I think I texted you guys this, you know, rewatching Top Gun. And I think we were probably going to talk about this. You know, it's like his charisma is like pops off the screen literally still 35 years later. It's like kind of mind blowing.
You know,
like how charismatic and that smile. I was like, I fell in love with him all over again. It's just amazing.
Wes said Leonardo DiCaprio the whole time. I was thinking Will Smith. You know, I was like, you know, Will Smith had that charisma, you know, in Independence Day, stuff like that, but not to the level of Tom Cruise. But maybe he's trying to get there with that smack. Maybe he's going to do the smack and then he's going to get a little bit crazier and then he's going to come back. And now he's trying to get on Tom Cruise level.
Oh, my God.
Will, unfortunately, Will had been pretty bad for a while too. Like his star, in my opinion, had really faded for a long time, and people still remembered, you know, his mega success that he had in the mid-90s to mid-2000s. But he kind of started to fall off and make some bad choices. And honestly, I don't know what him and Jada have going on, but they're just a little different now. And I think the public, for the most part, not necessarily turned on him, but just weren't as excited about him anymore. And unfortunately, he turned in a great performance, and I actually voted for him. You know, we've talked about that with the Music City Film Critics Association. You know, I voted for him in that role of King Richard, and I just hated to see that after he gets this recognition and he's kind of back on the map, that he goes and does something stupid like that. And now it's got everybody talking, but most of the stuff you hear is pretty negative in regards to it. So
not in a good way, right?
Not in a good way. Exactly.
Well, guys, let's not get off on a tangent with Big Willie. I'm just hoping he turns it around, 'cause I've always rooted for the guy, but let's come back to Top Gun. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Top Gun's cultural impact. Like, it had a big impact, and I know you guys are going to remember this stuff that I'm telling you. two roller coasters. One of them is close to us. The other one's out in California's Great American Park. It has the other one. It's called the Flight Deck now. But if you guys will remember, Kings Island also had the Top Gun. Mm-hmm. I was scared. I went to it one time. I didn't ride it because it looked frightening. The next time I went, and it was awesome. Have you guys, either one, I'm sure both of you guys have ridden Top Gun, haven't you?
See, you're Merlin. That sounds exactly like something Merlin would do. He would get up there, you know, he would kind of be like, kind of going crazy, not get on the roller coaster. Yeah, and then later, you know, it turned out it was actually
a Merlin move.
That's a Merlin move. Merlin,
yeah.
I was too young.
You're living up to your Merlin bona fides.
All right. So we got these two cool roller coasters. We had the... You guys, I know you'll remember the Nintendo game that came out in 1987.
Yes, definitely.
I owned 19 video games. That was one of them. I felt like it was terrible. I don't remember.
No, they were all terrible. All those based on movie games, I feel like, were terrible.
There was a Hot Wheel Top Gun plane. I had the little Hot Wheel Top Gun.
I remember that, yes.
It was the only plane, and you could get the Hot Wheel Top Gun plane. All the other Hot Wheels are cars, and it's like, bam.
Yeah. I feel like there was like a Pizza Hut like thing also going on. I'm making
sense. I thought there was a Happy Meal thing, but there wasn't. So that wasn't a thing. But maybe a Pizza Hut thing.
I feel like a Pizza Hut thing. Yeah, that's what now we're feeling. It. And let's just say it was.
What? Merlin will check into that off.
Yeah. Let's just say it was, even if it wasn't. And yeah, that's what we'll go with.
Well, I know the Ninja Turtles had a huge Pizza Hut thing when their movie came out.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
I like that. Go ahead.
What was the Pizza Hut thing, Tommy? Like planes with pizza boxes with wings?
I don't know. There's just something in my mind that makes Top Gun with Pizza Hut. Maybe it's because when I first saw it, I ate Pizza Hut. I don't know. There's something there, guys. Though, see, this is what I'm talking about. This is such a
maverick
move.
People were delivering pizzas in planes. Yeah. I don't know. What? I don't know what it is.
This is such a maverick move. You know, it's imploding before my very eyes. So, okay. Never know.
I mean... But I will say it had such a big cultural impact. Like at the time, I wasn't even thinking about being a pilot. I don't know what I was probably wanting to be, a dump truck driver still. I don't know. But I watched this movie and I was like, I'm going to be a pilot. Of course, I fell short of that. You know, it didn't. You know, and I was just hanging out with a bunch of pilots that
right.
made me feel really bad.
Your friend made it, though. That kind of counts.
Yeah, I know somebody. He was my roommate that made it. Nice. So pilot by association.
Very
but
nice.
Did you guys want to be pilots after this? I mean,
I don't think I ever want to become a pilot. Like, I feel like I did. Everybody should have a fighter pilot, you know, like stage. I will say this. After I watched it, I did have kind of a momentary like panic attack where I was like, man, I really messed up my life. I really should have became a fighter pilot.
I feel like Wes wanted to be a pilot.
Well, it wasn't that. I actually just wanted to go around and do that Val Kilmer bite at everybody after I watched the movie.
Wes just wanted to be a douchebag.
Bite.
Yeah. Wes is like, let me just be a douche. It's a lot easier. First of all, you don't got to do the fighting.
No studying. Just biting.
I mean, you have to study. You have to study douchebaggery to figure
that's
out
true.
Like.
It's a science. It's an
and
art,
that's one
really?
Of the things. Just. You know, you talk with somebody and it's kind of heated. You stand a little bit too close to them. You stare at them and then you just do that slow bite at them. Ridiculous. And then, yeah, you're good to go. So that's what I wanted to do after watching Top Gun. That's why I'm ice.
Very nice.
We have learned a lot. I'm Merlin. He's Iceman. We got Maverick on here. This has been not the intro like I was hoping for at all. I don't know what in the heck happened. But... Let's go to the last segment. This is a segment we're going to start adding to every one of our episodes. I don't know how it's going to fit when we're doing like Sharknado 3, but Tommy requested this. Now it's time for Tommy's Top Gun is Just Military Propaganda segment, a new segment we're adding to each one of our shows.
And who's Tommy, by the way?
T-Man.
Who?
Maverick, Gabe.
Maverick. Okay. Now it's time for Maverick.
Maverick Merlin.
Maverick Merlin?
Maverick Merlin.
We're doing awful
so
with these calls, Tom.
This is dumb. All right, go on with your segment, Tommy. What do you want to say about it just being military?
Well, I just think it's interesting. And, yeah, for all of our fans, that we are going to do this every episode from now on, Tommy's Propaganda Corner, where we're going to talk about the propagandist elements of movies and how Hollywood has been infiltrating and a lot of times brainwashing us in ways pro and good into their, you know, whatever type of agenda they're selling. But for this episode, we're going to talk about military propaganda. And this is only going to be a two-hour segment, so everybody just sit down and get your notepads out.
Hey, Greg Morgan and Bill and Dr. Shock and all of them, they're just like, oh, two-hour segment? Dude, that's nothing.
I sneeze at that.
Do this in my sleep. So I think really just the main point I want to make is, you know, watching it, I just find it really interesting how propaganda, you know, it can be very overt. And of course, you have a lot of propaganda films throughout history. You know, a lot of Chinese films can be considered propaganda, very nationalistic, and they're very obvious. And I think Top Gun is so ingenious because where it is basically propaganda for the American military. And, you know, of course, the Navy let them use a lot of their hardware. That's why they're able to keep the budget so low that honestly, it doesn't even feel like propaganda because it's so entertaining. And I feel like that the main point I want to make is what makes American Hollywood propaganda so impactful and so really successful around the world is Hollywood's been able to figure out a way where they can do propaganda, and it just doesn't have to be military propaganda. Think of all the movies that you guys think of that has some type of propaganda in it one way or the other. It could be all sorts of different types of agendas, but Hollywood makes it so entertaining that you don't even realize you're getting fed propaganda. And before you know it, your mind might be changing toward that level because, hey, the movie I loved or whatever was selling this, I've got to agree with it now too. And I think Top Gun is a perfect example of this. You know, I was reading how after the movie came out, you know, recruitment in the Navy, you know, rose up like amazing. Like it was a huge propaganda success for the Navy. They were putting recruiters in theater, like, you know, malls where people were coming out of the movie so hyped up and signing up for the Navy. You know, that type of stuff is really amazing, and it just shows you kind of the impact that Top Gun have. But it's not because it's, you know, overtly propaganda. It's done that way because it's so entertaining, and the propaganda doesn't feel like forced upon us. So I don't know if you guys have any reactions to that.
Well, apparently I have a quite simple mind because right after the movie, I wanted to become a pilot. So it propaganded the crap out of me.
Hey, I told you that I did too. So it worked.
You know, I agree with you, and they can do it because they make it entertaining. And entertain me, I'll listen to your propaganda. That's my rule, you know.
That's what I'm like. Well, like, think about, like, the old Soviet-style propaganda films back in the old days. I've watched a couple of them. Like, they're so boring.
Boring.
So, they
don't want it. They don't want their people to get propaganded. You know,
like, you're selling communism. Nobody wants this. We're selling. And that's the thing. American propaganda sells capitalism, materialism, sex, all of the good stuff. So, you know, they got to come
I either
easy.
Want my propaganda in a big blockbuster, or I want it in one of those secret mixtapes like Zach Morris did in Saved by the Bell and with a subliminal message. That's the only way I will take my propaganda.
That's fair. That's a good point.
All right. Well, guys, I think we've gone a little bit off the rails and pretty deep into Top Gun, but I think we should just go ahead and, you know, I'm going to have Wes lead us through the movie so I don't lose us any further.
Well, that's not my name.
Okay. I'm going to have Iceman, who awkwardly pauses every time I say the wrong name, lead us through the movie so I don't ruin this any further.
Oh, thanks, Merlin. Yeah, Let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back on the other side, and we'll dive into Top Gun.
Earth is looking for other life. Starship Journeyer has been recalled, only to be captured by the U-Bide alien race of incredible intellect and ally of the Dearths, a carnivorous yet intelligent reptilian race. Captain Cage was abducted. Crew members Eva Cusping and Enrico Dalchez were caught between two warring kingdoms. Captain Cage and Eva Cusping discover a secret about themselves. One will feel rage, the other enlightenment. Humans and other races go on a desperate journey while relentlessly hunted. Are we alone in the universe? Is there a god? What does the future hold? Do you really want to know?
You just heard the YouTube trailer for author Stephen Couch's epic sci-fi book series, Shadowed Stars. If you're a regular listener of Real Talk, you've heard a lot about Shadowed Stars. You know that book one, Shadowed Stars, and book two, The Reign of the Black Guard, are available now. But great news, because book three, Children of Home, is coming soon. And we'll be talking with Stephen about book three on an upcoming episode of our interview series. For those of you who are new to Shadowed Stars, head over to ShadowedStarsBooks.com. You'll be able to get the latest information on the series, learn more about author Stephen Couch, read his short stories, and find direct links to purchase the books. Again, that's ShadowedStarsBooks.com. And speaking of books, Stephen has 8 numbered books planned in the series, with more unnumbered ones to follow. And I love what Stephen is doing with the characters, as there are different characters between the odd and even numbered books, with some cameos mixed in. This keeps the story arcs fresh and the pages turning. Keep in mind, Shadowed Stars is for a mature audience with mature themes, which is different from most of the stories you get in the sci-fi and fantasy realm. So, are we alone in the universe? Is there a God? What does the future hold? There's only one way to find out. Go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes Store, wherever you get your books, and start your journey into the Shadowed Stars universe.
All right. It's time to get into 1986's Top Gun, and I think most of our audience has probably heard episodes from us before, but what we like to do with these walkthroughs is I'm going to throw out just a handful of scenes we call a sequence, and then we'll just kind of get everybody's reaction to, and in this case, the shenanigans that are taking place in this movie. And I always want to throw out as well, if you've never seen Top Gun before, it's a great time to do so. Yeah, who are you? But this is, it's a great time to do so with Maverick coming out, just to kind of, you know, watch the original story and then what they're going to do. Because I think, honestly, I'm really excited for Maverick to come out. And I think from what I've heard, a lot of other people are too. Like several people that normally don't get excited for movies and haven't been to the theater in years are like, I think I'm going to go see the new Top Gun. We're going to spoil the crap out of this movie. So if you don't want us to spoil Top Gun for you, be a good time to pause this, watch Top Gun, and then come back and join us.
But if you want to get ready for the new Top Gun without having to watch the old one, this is your place.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, if you just want to listen to us recreate the movie here and you never even have to watch it, you can do that too. Yeah. All right. The movie opens with the USS Enterprise on patrol near the Persian Gulf when radar contact is made with a MiG fighter. And they never really call it the Russians in the movie, but that's basically what a MiG fighter is. So they send 2 planes to meet the incoming aircraft. One is manned by pilot Maverick, played by Tom Cruise, and his radar. Do what now?
Same person, I feel
same,
like.
Yeah, it's basically the same.
My gosh.
I don't see any real resemblance difference.
None whatsoever.
And his radar interceptor officer, which is who was what Merlin is, but in this case, the radar interceptor officer is Goose, played by Anthony Edwards. The second F-14 is piloted by Cougar and Gabe, Merlin, played by Tim Robbins. They're surprised. I'm just getting confused, you know, is going through this.
I can't keep track of this.
I don't have any resemblance to Tim Robbins.
They are surprised that there is a second MiG that didn't pick up on the radar. Cougar is outmaneuvered by one of the MiGs while Maverick gets missile lock on the other one. MiG-2 immediately disengages and flies off, leaving his partner all alone with 2 enemy planes. MiG-1 stays on Cougar, and he has missile lock, but is somehow scared off by Maverick when Maverick flies upside down, basically on top of the MiG plane, and flips him off.
That's so ridiculous.
Cougar is so rattled by this experience, he instantly kind of goes crazy and starts flying the plane like he just blew a 0.5 blood alcohol level. Maverick, on low fuel and against orders, talks him through landing, where Cougar promptly turns in his wings. So there we go. That's the opening of Top Gun. What do you guys think? What do you think about this opening? Anything that sticks out?
So many things. You know, when it opens up, it opens up with one of those jet montages. I'm like, man, these are some of the best jet landing montages that I've ever seen. All it is planes just landing on that aircraft carrier and that guy dancing with the cones. And I really did like that. But as I'm watching, I'm like, what pops into my head is like, this movie was made for TNT. Like, as soon as I'm watching it, this movie was made to be on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on TNT. Wes wouldn't know anything about that. But Tommy, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, this is like a Hall of Fame Saturday afternoon TNT film for sure.
The double feature, Days of Thunder, then Top Gun.
Days of Thunder, I feel like, was USA.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
For some reason, Days of Thunder was always on USA Network.
Yeah, TNT's too good for Days of Thunder.
Right, yes.
Merlin, what I was going to say to your point is that well, the guys that you're talking about that are landing the planes, they are having the time of their lives, according to this movie. They're like high-fiving and dancing around, and it's just like they just love their freaking job.
Yeah.
But when you watch like in real life on aircraft carriers, like that work looks awful.
Yeah.
Like it's got to be hot as hell, and they're doing like carrying around huge pieces of equipment, and then like these rock star fighter pilots just stroll up in there, jump on in, and fly away. They don't do any. They're just. It's like, man, I don't do any of the
grunt work.
Right.
Let me tell you, that cone guy is another one of those guys. Look, if I'm offending anybody in the military, I'm so sorry, but I don't know what that guy does. He's signaling the planes to come down. They were already landing. What were they going to do if they were coming down and that guy wasn't pulling two cones in the air back towards himself? Like, were they going to stop? Like, no.
Yes, Gabe.
No.
You got to have some order on. Here's the thing. An aircraft, like a carrier, is very, you know, packed and crowded, and there's a lot of people doing a lot of things. You can have multiple planes, on that deck. So you got to have order, man.
You have a guy in your microphone that could just be like, don't land the plane right now. Is that cone guy really necessary?
Here's the thing that I got to say, though. Honestly, when I was rewatching this, I was like, first off, I was like, wait a minute, are we watching Hot Shots? Because Hot Shots literally starts just like this. I was like, wait, which came first, Hot Shots or Top Gun? Of course, Top Gun came first. Hot Shots was a parody of Top Gun. But I thought that was funny. And I got to say, the opening montage is pretty great with just the visuals. You know, the smoky, kind of the hazy filmography that Tony Scott uses. And it really, it's really good. It's really well made in that way.
Yeah, that music just gets you pumped up as soon as it's coming on. And I actually just listen to Danger Zone every once in a while just because I like the song a lot. It's just a fun, fun song. So I love how it starts with that.
There's things I will tease about, but this is my second most watched movie. I watched the movie, and afterwards I have that Apple thing where you can download any sound. I downloaded the soundtrack instantly. It's a great soundtrack.
And you just listen to the love song by Berlin. I can't even think of the name of it.
You say you never close your eyes anymore when I.
No, what the one where they're having sex.
Oh, the one where they're hooking up.
Take my breath away.
Take my breath away. There you go. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, I mean, that's dumb. That's the song I listen to the most.
The soundtrack was like huge. It was amazingly successful. And I think that song won best song at the Oscars.
Oh, Take My Breath Away did?
I think so. Let me look it up, but I'm pretty sure.
And then they completely disappeared after that. I don't even know if they even attempted to record another song. They're like, we can't do anything else. One of the things that I really like about this particular sequence is it's so funny that, they think they're going to go and check out one MiG and there's actually two because they were flying so close together. And then as soon as Maverick gets locked, that other guy's just like, all right, I'm out of here. just completely leaves the other plane with two enemy planes. Like, it's, yeah, see ya.
It's for dramatic effect, Wes. You know, just like, I mean, I don't know. I really like when that sticks out to you. Maverick flicking off the guy from upside down sticks out.
That's
the one thing.
That's ridiculous. When I was rewatching it, I was like, what? There is no way a fighter pilot would really do that.
There's no way a plane can do that, I don't think. Well, why does Zeus have a Polaroid in the back seat? Like, what was he planning on taking?
Okay, that stunt was really done. I'm pretty sure.
That's impressive.
Yeah, the stunt work in this movie is incredible. Like, I've kind of read a little bit about it, and I'm pretty positive that was an actual stunt work that was done on it. And a lot of the stuff, pretty much everything was done. And actually, you know, unfortunately, one of the stunt pilots actually died in a crash.
I remember reading it. It was the movie was dedicated to him at the end. I forgot what his name is. We'll put that in the show notes. But when he's flicking him off, like, what was that Polaroid for? Was Goose going to take like 90 shots at the back of Tom Cruise's head? Like, what was his plan?
It's really dumb.
See very much. He pretty much just sees the sky and the back of Maverick's helmet, and that's really it. But he's got a Polaroid just in case you need it.
Well, what's funny is, like, rewatching it now, like, our sensibilities have changed so much since this movie, like, for blockbusters, because, you know, I guess maybe I guess you could say that fits something maybe that the Fast and Furious franchise would do, maybe. But, like, I just can't imagine a current blockbuster doing something that goofy. And, like, it just doesn't play as well now. But in the 80s, that's what people expected out of their blockbusters. Just, like, some really goofiness on top of the other stuff. But you always got to have that goofy shine to these films for some reason.
Yeah, Total Recall. Full of it. Well, that came out in 1990, but still, I mean, it was shot in the 80s.
Well, think of, like, the other Arnold movies, right? Like Commando and Running Man all those. Commando. And then the Sly Stallone movies and all of those. They're just so goofy.
Your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
I feel really bad because I feel like I'm putting myself in one of those boxes where I'm going to have all of our backseat pilots write into me and, like, be really upset with me. But I just don't know. Tell me what they do so I know what these backseat pilots do, because, I mean, Goose is just holding that Polaroid. I'm Merlin. You know, if anybody ever needed help in this movie, it was Cougar. He was sweating like 30 gallons of water at once, like, trying to land that plane. Like Wes said, he looked drunk out of his mind. He was just swerving. And that backseat pilot is just probably sitting there with his Polaroid, and he doesn't have anything he can do. I mean, he's
yeah, Merlin's not even helping. It takes Maverick on low gas. And here's the thing. Why was Maverick on low gas? They just took off.
I have no idea.
Nobody filled him up, I guess.
Maverick grabbed the wrong plane. He's so eccentric, he grabbed one of the planes that had just landed.
Gas guzzler.
Cone guy should have grabbed a gas can and got that plane filled up, because they needed a gas man more than a cone man.
So, you know, looking online, and, you know, anything we see online has got to be true. But I feel like the backseat guy is a weapons system officer or electronic warfare officer. And so here it says in the Navy, they could be a radar intercept officer for fighters like the F-14. So that's probably what this person was a radar intercept officer.
Gotcha.
Just backseat driver is what we call them.
I always thought they had a second steering wheel, but now that I know that they don't, that makes me
feel kind of... I don't know any plane that has a steering
wheel. I don't think they have a steering wheel, man. That's some Merlin shit right there.
Yeah, that's something Merlin would say. See, that's the Merlin coming out of me.
Hey, Merlin did touch on it with Cougar just sweating like crazy, but why is everybody profusely sweating no matter what scene it is?
I don't know. It's honestly uncomfortable to watch.
The whole movie, I Googled it, and there's nothing about it. I feel like we owe it to Google to create a page and find out. I feel like, you know, if we ever do anything in our lives, guys, I think we should start a docuseries. Me, Iceman, and Maverick
there you
should
go.
just should just go and interview the cast and like find out why they were covered in water. Was it for sex appeal?
Yeah, well, I mean
it was working on me.
There's two things. I think it's funny to laugh about because, right, it's like, why do they not have air conditioning in these aircraft? But I think the real answer is Tony Scott loves that type of sheen in his films. If you watch his other movies, Crimson Tide is just like that. For some reason, you know, Ridley Scott likes it too. Think of Alien. It has tons of those shots of the sweat and the water percolating on surfaces. Mm-hmm. So those Scott brothers, they love it. But yeah, to your point, Gabe, it is really goofy. And Wes, it's like, why in the world are they sweating so much? And how do they not have air conditioning? It's got to be uncomfortable.
You well, can I love how Google it, fans. You can Google it, and you can't figure it out from Google. So it's like we need to give this to the people.
Cougar, I mean, when he comes in to turn his wings in, he still haven't stopped sweating, you know. So I guess he got out of the plane sweating like crazy, went into the office, immediately turned his wings in sweating. And then the sweaty, you know, officer, the guy in charge, when Maverick and Goose, he calls them in, they're both sweating, and then they're just all sweating together.
Right. It almost makes me, sometimes I think like, are they just out of the shower and they didn't dry off enough?
Yeah, it's too much water to just.
Are they sweating, or is it a combination of things? You know, sometimes guys, you guys know this. You take a really hot shower, you get out, you dry off, but not great. But you're also sweat. You start sweating too. Sometimes I feel like it's that because their hair's always wet. So I think there could be a combination of things going on here. Honestly,
just bad towels.
I thought maybe they were. Else? I thought yeah. maybe like they all had diseases. I didn't know. Like, well, that's a lot of sweat.
Like, diseases, like typhoid fever.
Just a big case of typhoid going around.
They're
there.
Fighter pilots. I feel like they you got to be healthy to fly.
They were screened for that, I guess.
Yeah, I guess there was just no air conditioning. You know, the Navy has a big budget. We spend a lot of money on the military, but for some reason, they don't give the Navy enough for air conditioning. That's strange.
Maybe that volleyball scene was so hot, they just couldn't keep women off of them after that. And they're just all sweaty because women just, you know, that could be it, right?
No, I don't. I don't even know what that means.
It's such a Merlin thing to say. I'm sorry.
I didn't even know what that meant.
I don't either. It perhaps might be a good time to move on to sequence two.
Right. Okay. There we go.
So Maverick and Goose learn that they'll be headed to Top Gun in Miramar, which is near San Diego. They are, of course, overjoyed as they'll be training and competing with the best pilots the Air Force has to offer. Pretty much instantly, Maverick begins a rivalry with perceived best pilot Tom Iceman Kazansky, played by Val Kilmer, and his RIO Slider, played by Rick Rosenvich. This includes Maverick just staring at Ice in class and making short, aggressive remarks. Later that night, pretty much everyone goes to the nightclub or bar to celebrate, where Maverick makes eyes with a pretty blonde in jeans, played by Kelly McGillis. He then goes in for the kill, which is a combination of singing the Righteous Brothers to her, stalking her into the ladies' room, and making her and the audience feel he might sexually assault her in any second.
I really thought he was going to. What's happening?
Still, I'm not sure.
Surprisingly, that doesn't work, and she leaves with a much older date. The next day, we find out that the pretty blonde is actually a DOD flight instructor, call sign Charlie, who will be teaching the pilots textbook maneuvers. Maverick is embarrassed. So there's where we'll leave off. Sequence two, the boys have made it to Top Gun and have already gotten into some trouble. So, guys, what do y'all think about sequence two?
I'll let T-Man start off, but I've got to say, Wes, that is one of your top segment writing, you know, done. That was that made me literally cry. I laughed so hard. And I'll steal one quote from this segment to try to boost it a little bit. Now, this is what I call a target-rich environment. Nice. Anybody?
Oh, man. That's what I say every time I walk into Walmart.
All right, go ahead.
I think it was, you laid it out great. Now, you know, because this one, there's not a lot that happens in this. You know, you got a lot of building into the plot of the movie. So I think, Wes, honestly, you did it. You did this segment justice. I don't know if there's a lot more to add other than I never understood, like, this rivalry just all of a sudden. And like Maverick, like you said, Maverick's like looking back at him and Iceman's like looking at him. And it's like so weird. And it's like there's some tension there. I don't know. There's just some, are they attracted to each other?
Sometimes that's what I was going to say.
Potentially. Yeah,
potentially. You know, there's a lot of those tones. And there's been a lot talked about with Top Gun around that. So I don't know. It's very strange, though, that they're just like all into each other. And like, we've got to have this rivalry, like, from the get-go.
I do. And how does Goose, like, know all of this information about everybody? Like, he literally got there at the same time as Maverick. And he's leaning over and he's like, you know, that's the best pilot right there. It's Iceman. Yeah. cool as ice, or whatever he says.
Yeah. It's got ice in his blood.
When you're Maverick, you got to have an A-list wingman. And so that's what Goose is. You know, Goose doesn't bring anything to the table other than his knowledge of fellow fighter pilots.
The only way it could have been better is if he had Merlin. But, you know,
he gets Merlin later, and they just don't have the same chemistry.
No, they don't have any chemistry. Honestly, Merlin got cut after this movie, I'm pretty sure.
Well, what I love is that whenever they show Val Kilmer at the little nightclub thing where everything's going down, his name is Iceman. He's drinking ice water. He's got frosted hair that looks like it has ice in it. He's basically Mr. Freeze before Arnold.
Yes.
This is. I love that they just kind of.
He was going to be in the Batman. They knew that later on.
They lean into it, right? Yeah, they really do. It's like he's built this whole persona for himself. He's like, you know what? I want to be called Iceman. I'm only going to drink ice water. I got this hair. I got to do it, guys. I'm going all in. And that's the thing. When you got a cool, sick name like Iceman, you do need to go all in. Like, if I had a sick nickname like Iceman, I would do the same thing. You would only see me drinking, like, Zimas. So that's all I would drink.
Nobody's drank one in 15 years.
Zimas? I don't even know if those are still a thing.
I'm sure you could get some off like eBay or something. So I would back order whatever they got left, and that's all anybody would see me drink, or ice cold Zimas. Because remember those commercials that always chilled people out. And so that would be my thing as Iceman.
Zima.
When Iceman's not flying a plane, he cracks into an ice cold Zima.
I've literally got foils in my hair right now. Like, I am frosting up my hair. I'm gonna lean into this role.
You got to, man. You got to. Let's find you some Zima.
Yeah, let's get it ordered. I'm gonna look and see if I can get a six pack of Zima. Like, you know, Google's doing this thing where, you know, it's like you can get it same day. So I'll go over and see if I can have some Zimas cracked open by the end of this episode.
Everybody's
not drenched in water in this movie. Everybody's drenched in Val Kilmer's Zimas because he's in between takes. He's just putting Zimas all
that's
over.
That's what he's
everybody.
Doing. He's just spraying it on everybody.
They didn't have time to get all the Zima. I love it. Everybody.
Zima. Oh, and then on top of that, we've got Trevette from Walker, Texas Ranger. In Walker and Top Gun, I'm going to do it again, same universe. So when Trevette, when he's not being a Texas Ranger, he's flying airplanes at sundown and seeing the Righteous Brothers in nightclubs.
Nice. Well, here's the thing, Wes. This was several years before Walker. So, you know, with this character, he probably, you know, he retired from the Navy, or he left, joined the U.S. Marshals.
Yep. There you go. And he met Chuck Norris.
I do feel like this song thing in this section is one of the, it's so corny, but it's so iconic. Like, everybody remembers it type sections. You know, it's not something a Merlin could pull off. It's only something a Maverick. Like, if I went to a bar to try to do this, I would start singing and nobody would start singing. Like,
it's so ridiculous. It's so 80s. It kind of goes back to what we're talking about. Like, it makes no sense that, like, there's this working microphone and everybody just stops and sings together. There's never been anything close to this in any place I've ever been in. It's truly insane.
And they try to recreate it in Scream, Scream 2, and they recreate it in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah, they do. Heath Ledger does it too.
Yep, Heath Ledger's doing it. And then in Scream 2, they do the cafeteria at the college.
That's right. Yeah. I don't know. I always find these scenes cringy. I just never like them.
It is cringy, but I do think this is one of the most iconic scenes of the movie.
It is, for sure. It's just cringy still.
Yeah, and the cringe gets worse whenever he almost gets his rape on.
Yeah, then he's like, let me follow you into this bathroom.
That was, I had never really noticed that before, but it had been a little bit since I had seen it. And I guess I always knew that, you know, Maverick kind of went in there and they were talking or whatever. But I mean, he just is like, he is not taking no for an answer. He just, like, you know, it's obvious that she's like, okay, yeah, that was cool, but my date's here. And he goes after her in the bathroom and is leaning over and kind of, you know, kind of talking like this and kind of just has this really aggression really to creepy. Him. And
normal,
I'm just like, man,
normal
this
Maverick
is worse than
Tommy
I remember.
Behavior. It's just normal for them. Normal Maverick slash Tommy behavior, right, Tommy?
Dang.
No, I gotta say, I've never done anything like this. So I really know. I'm not following anybody into any bathrooms.
All right. Not even during your, like, you know, your voyeur, you know, after you were, you know, watching people just for research purposes?
No, never involved bathrooms.
Okay.
Well, anything else about this sequence before we head into sequence 3?
No.
No, not on this one.
But I'm kind of craving a Zima now.
Yeah, I am too. I got a thirst I need quenched, and Zima is the only remedy.
I tell you what, for some reason, I watched some of those commercials not too long ago. And I don't know, man. They're ridiculous, but man, they make me want a Zima.
It's great advertising.
Oh, man.
All right. So, sequence 3 here. In his first exercise, Maverick takes on Top Gun's enemy pilot, Jester, played by Michael Ironside. And he succeeds in outmaneuvering him and getting missile lock. But in doing so, he flies below the hard deck, which in Top Gun doesn't count. Then he buzzes the tower, and the "I want some butts" guy spills coffee all over himself. Daddy Ice chews out Maverick for his unsafe attitude, and the Maverick and Maverick and Goose get into trouble with both Jester, his commanding officer Viper, played by Tom Skerritt. Viper, however, knows Maverick's father because Maverick's father flew with him in Vietnam and was shot down when he engaged the enemy in neutral airspace. So Viper has a kind of a soft spot for Maverick and respects his amazing flying ability. For a little good news, Charlie, who has become a little smitten with Maverick and wants to hear more about the MiG, invites Maverick to her house for dinner. However, you can't have a little dinner with a beautiful girl until you play what appears to be a professional volleyball match in jeans. During the volleyball match, due to the volleyball match, Maverick is late for dinner with Charlie, but it's cool. So that's sequence 3, and quite a bit to talk about here.
Well, I mean, I just got to jump in right off the bat and say, this is really, like, kind of this middle sequence here is really Top Gun at its most, like, ridiculous. Like, I didn't even understand what was happening through many of these segments. So you got, they're playing volleyball, and for some reason they have jeans on. And yeah, like you said, it's like a professional volleyball situation going on. And
how are you going to work that "Hanging with the Boys" song into it if you didn't have that?
That is true.
With the boys, you
know. That's a ridiculous song. And Tom Cruise keeps checking his freaking watch, but while he does it, he's flexing. That's pretty great. He's like really flexing at it. It's like, who are you flexing to, man? And first off, I got to say also, there's a lot to unpack here with this, obviously. Why is Tom Cruise the spiker? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
He's like 5'7". And he's a then foot you got shorter. Goose. Tall. But like, Goose keeps setting Maverick.
It makes no sense. In what world would Tom Cruise be the spiker? No world.
Merlin out there to be doing some magic on the ball.
That's true, because Tim Robbins is like 6'5", so that would actually make more sense.
Yeah.
But then you got this date makes zero sense. I know we haven't gotten all the way into that date yet, but man, Tom Cruise got to go to this date with jeans on, and he shows up, and he's like, hey, I want to take a shower. What type of date have you ever shown up and immediately comes in, I need to take a shower?
Oh, I love like, how she kind of, like, it puts her off. Like, it's almost like a real reaction. And she's like, I do mind. I'm hungry. You're late. So I'm ready to eat.
Right. Who wouldn't mind? Like, it is ridiculous. I don't understand this sequence of events in this movie. Why is he playing this volleyball game right before this date? Why does he show up wanting to take a shower at this date?
Well, so before we really get into that date, I back to the volleyball scene, because what is so funny about this, the volleyball scene, is obviously we've already talked about the jeans. Every time they spike, they smack the net with their hands, which is a foul. If I was watching the movie this time and I was cracking up, I've played a lot of volleyball matches and stuff. Every time they're slapping the net and it's shaking, so they're fouling. They're not really scoring well.
They're not playing volleyball right. You're not supposed to do that and or wear jeans, from what I know.
You're not supposed to do either of those.
No.
Who the hell are these people in the bleachers? Have you seen how many people are in? They're cheering everybody on. Like, who are these people?
It's like 2:00 on a Thursday. And, like, you got these guys in jeans playing volleyball, like, and Tom Cruise keeps checking his watch. They're probably like, why does he keep checking his watch? And...
Wes? I've got the answer for you. You remember the movie The Little Giants, when they finally have their championship game and like the whole town's out in the bleachers? That's, same people.
I got you.
Same people.
They got nothing else better to do besides watch 10-year-olds play football and then
watch recreational sports.
Navy at guys.
Basic level.
There we go. Now play that makes a lot of sense. Game. And
what about when Tom Cruise just leaves? He's just like they're in the middle of a match or something. He's like, oh, I got to go.
Yeah. He says it's two to two. He was like, it's 2-2. And Tom Cruise is like, I don't care.
And the fans are wanting more. They're clamoring for more. They're cheering. They're trying to get Maverick to come back. But he won't do it.
Like, that's the other thing, right? Are these like teams like well known in the Navy world? Are they like professional volleyball guys? It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, man. Lots of questions.
And then we didn't even bring up when Slider, he just kind of, they zoom in on him for a second, and he just kind of turns and does this pose.
Yeah, the pose.
You know what I'm talking about? The Slider pose.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. And then what about when they're done and Tom Cruise puts on his jacket? Is there anything worse than playing sports and getting all sweaty and then putting on your jacket?
A leather jacket.
Yeah, why would he do that?
He's got to look cool, He's about to ride
hot.
That.
Like they're shirtless, so it's obviously hot. But they are wearing jeans, so maybe it's not so hot. You really just don't know what's happening.
His attire is just not for what he's attempting to do.
No,
you know the only one that's wearing the right things, and I noticed this the last time. It's like at first I thought what Goose was wearing was ridiculous because he has a cutoff t-shirt and shorts, and his t-shirt's kind of weird. But I was like, then I was sitting there, I was like, you know, he's the only one that dressed properly here. Right. You know, I thought maybe they were just didn't put on, you know, Goose didn't have a six pack and pecs, you know, like everybody else. But then I was like, no, he just dressed properly for the scene.
He just dressed for volleyball is what he dressed for. You know, yeah. Ice has got wrist wraps on and he's got like these tight Bruce Lee black pants. It's like, no, man, you're supposed to be in karate. This is volleyball.
Right. It's like. You know, it's like each actor showed up of how they wanted to be. And like Goose was just like, Anthony Answer was like, I'm just dressed like I'm playing volleyball. The other guys are like, dressed just like, it just makes no sense.
Well, it made me think of Wes, do you remember that one time I told you there was a big sand volleyball tournament and it turns out it was actually mud volleyball? And so you dressed like very improperly. We all did.
Yep. You said, hey, we're going to have a volleyball tournament. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I'll show up. And when I get there, he was like, oh yeah, it's mud volleyball. And I'm like, hey, we won though. We won the tournament. So that was
maybe cool. Maybe it was something like that. Maybe, you know, they thought they were going to be doing something different. And I don't know.
Before even the volleyball scene takes place, I did want to talk about this just a little bit because, you know, you got their first flying training session in Top Gun. And, you know, the gentleman says, like I think it's Jester talking to everybody. He says, you know, gentlemen, you're flying against smaller, faster planes and are more maneuverable, just like the enemy planes. Then the instructors, they get to fly those planes in training. Why aren't we just investing in and training pilots to fly the smaller, more maneuverable enemy planes? Why do we keep sending them up in, like, you know, the Navy's version of the Cadillac?
Because if they had those, it won't be as cool when you defeat them with the big Cadillac planes, Wes. I don't know if what you're not
guess,
following.
But like, I started laughing. Well, like
everybody
that.
Loves an underdog like, story.
Why are we doing this?
But here's the thing. I mean,
technology out there.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you know, these, and that actually is true. Those minis were smaller than our F-14s. You know, each different type of plane just kind of has its own benefits. And, you know, in the dogfighting world, the F-14s actually turned out to be, you know, incredible. So I think it just depends on kind of what you're looking for. Just because it's smaller, faster doesn't mean it's better. You just kind of have to, you know, find each one's kind of, they kind of have their own, you know, positives, I guess you can say.
See, Wes, well, I didn't hit about with... the, Wes was thinking about the technicalities, and I was more so during that section. I was like, man, you know, I like this movie the way it is, but this movie would be pretty cool if it was just one big giant flying montage. So maybe, maybe that's in the future for us. Top Gun 3, I don't know.
Well, I didn't bring up a good point there. That one kind of got shot down. What about this one? So this is where Maverick blows everybody's mind with the freaking hit the brakes and they fly right by routine.
I love that.
Later in class, they call it the gutsiest move I've ever seen, and it isn't textbook. Am I missing something? He's literally just slowing the plane down.
It is gutsy, though. I mean, what if the plane hit him, Wes?
I guess. He's just slowing down. The other plane goes before. I mean, has no one ever thought of that before?
I don't know why it's gutsy. Yeah, why were they saying it was gutsy?
Gutsiest move I've ever seen.
Gutsiest move I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they weren't these top pilots weren't very inventive because they're all drunk off Zima. I don't know.
I was just cracking up at that. I'm like, he's literally just slowing down.
Gabe, it's obvious we should have brought some of your fighter pilot friends on here because we are not fighter pilots.
We are
experts.
Butchering this. And if there are any fighter pilots, like tomorrow I'm going to wake up and there's going to be like 30 back pilots like standing at my door and I'm going to be like, look, I just didn't know.
Well, maybe we'll finally get some emails.
There we go. Fighter pilots, email us.
Not me.
Don't show up at my house. I've ever seen, man.
I do. Isn't there a sequence where they're like, Maverick give more natural talent than any damn fighter pilot I've ever seen.
Yeah. And basically, so far, he's just slowed down.
Well, no, Wes, he did turn upside down and take a Polaroid picture.
But remember, nobody believes that at first.
Oh, that's
because
true.
Remember, yeah. Ice even goes, bullshit, under bullshit call.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. I will say this. Even though, you know, the flight sequences are incredible in this movie because it's all real.
Yeah, but they are. They're really cool.
They still are.
Yeah, they still really are. They really hold up well. But it's also sometimes you're not exact. It is kind of hard. And that's just the nature of the beast with showing aerial photography is sometimes you're just not exactly sure what's happening. Mm-hmm. Like, especially if you're not an expert in the aviation world, like sometimes you're like, well, that looks pretty cool, but I'm just not sure. So I think that's where probably the
brakes
they
thing
probably
thing
came that up with the stopping because it's so obvious what he's doing. So like whether it really is cool or not, I don't know, but it's obvious to us because we're all used to like, oh, you can stop a car, so that I know what that means. Mm-hmm. But if you're getting into really like technical aspects of like dogfighting and flights and stuff, I don't know if we would understand it necessarily.
Well, no, we definitely wouldn't. But it would crack me up if a bunch of, you know, people went into the Navy and or, you know, Air Force or whatever, and they're like, man, I can't wait to pull off that Maverick. Like, just
I want to stop mid-air.
And it's like on day one, they like spin the plane out of control, and they're, you know, they tell the boss, it's like, all right, well, you're out. You can't just killed. Stop the plane in mid-flight.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, we'll move on to sequence four here. So
hold on, Wes. I've been debating for like 5 minutes whether or not to tell my dad joke about that, and I've decided I will tell it. Right, I'm really going to regret it. Boy, those were some air brakes.
All right, it was sequence four.
Okay. I'm not even saying anything.
Definitely a Merlin joke.
It's so funny. I'm glad I did it.
The contest between Maverick and Iceman continues. In a later exercise, Viper and Jester team up against Maverick's plane and Hollywood and Wolfman's plane. Maverick breaks a cardinal rule by abandoning his wingman to go after Viper. And in doing so, Hollywood is shot down, and then the same fate befalls Maverick. Then in class, Maverick is further ridiculed when they study his encounter with the MiG, and Charlie says it's not textbook and dangerous. Maverick gets pissed and drives off on his motorcycle, only to be chased down by Charlie, who tells him she sees some genius in his flying, but couldn't say that in front of the other pilots. The sexual tension is finally broken. Then we get some Berlins that take my breath away. And a nice little sex scene between Charlie and Maverick. Maverick's plane and Iceman's plane are now going head-to-head for Top Gun's trophy as the contest is winding down, which is a little side note I found interesting because Maverick keeps messing up. I don't even know how he's scoring points to be able to be in second.
I never understood that either.
But during the training mission, Maverick and Ice are both going after the same plane. When Ice can't close the deal, Maverick moves in to take the shot. But when the two aircrafts get close, the backwash from Ice's thrusters cripple Maverick's engines, and the F1 plunges towards the sea. Goose barely succeeds in yanking open the emergency ejection handles, but when the fighter's canopy pops open, the two pilots eject, and Goose crashes into the canopy, killing him. So quite a bit takes place here as far as the language, but it's really just a couple of training scenes. The romance between Maverick and Charlie, and then Goose passing away. So what do you guys have here for sequence four?
Let's not start with the Goose death scene, because that's one of the most memorable deaths. We'll talk about that later. But I actually have some facts here instead of just ridiculous stuff like I normally say. Number one, I've been on the street. It's in California. It's in San Diego that they drive on, and it is really a pretty street, so I see why they picked it. It's pretty awesome. Cool thing number one. Thing number two is, and I knew this beforehand, I read where the sex scene was actually shot after the movie, because like the fans that were watching, like in the test audience, I don't know what, Tommy probably knows the technical term there, in the test screenings, they said they needed some more romance in there. And I thought that was cool. And I mean, what a good scene we got. I mean, we wouldn't have got Take Your Breath Away if we hadn't.
Gabe, that's a good point, because I actually remember hearing how they did do that because Kelly McGillis had already cut her hair, and she's actually wearing a wig in the sex scene.
Yeah. I mean, and they made it intense. Like, so what the fans wanted, they gave it to them.
It is an awful sex scene. Like, truly awful.
The tongues are doing things I didn't even know tongues did in that.
No, they shouldn't do. Whatever they're doing should be against the law.
You know what it reminded? You remember yes, that is strange, but it reminds me of Mark Wahlberg in Fear. I don't know. The whole time I'm watching it, you know, when Tom Cruise stares at her in the bathroom, to when Tom Cruise is looking at her covered in sweat in the elevator, like that look in the elevator was the same look Marky Mark and the dad were doing to each other in Fear.
Yeah, Tom definitely has a stalker vibe to him in this movie.
Like, I don't think that's love. It's something.
Merlin, I just thought of a good dad joke since you like those. After that hot sex scene, Kelly McGillis's call sign should have been changed from Charlie to Cougar. Anything else that you got for this particular scene before we talk about the ice death?
I will say that there are some
Goose death.
Like we talked about with the flight sequences, like these flight sequences are really awesome to rewatch.
Yeah, every time.
I mean, you can tell they really brought it. I mean, these test pilots they had on this were amazing. Just doing some really, you know, awesome things that really had never been done in movies before. And they really hold up well. And so I really liked rewatching them and just kind of, you know, just being there watching those sequences was really cool. I can see how in 1986, like, people were just blown away by that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love one of the things that was making me laugh, like, and it kind of I picked up on it about midway through. I love how Ice just is constantly standing around like a disappointed dad every time he's around Maverick. It's just so funny. It's just like Maverick just disappoints Ice.
Yeah, he's always just like, I can't think of anything he'd say, but I know what you're saying. Like, he's always just disappointed or like, you're too dangerous, man.
You're dangerous. I think he says it.
I was more so thinking, like, when you were talking about how those flight montages hold up, like, I don't think they hold up without the great soundtrack. You know? Like, I think you have to have Highway to the Danger Zone playing while they're happening. I think they play well to each other. And then I like what they do with, you know, Goose playing Great Balls of Fire. And for the longest time, I didn't know that was Meg Ryan. Like, I knew who Meg Ryan was, sure. but somebody was like, Meg Ryan's in Top Gun. And I had to, like, go back and watch it. And I was like, that is Meg Ryan, because she's so young in this section. But I like how they endure you to him and Meg Ryan right before. And I really do think that this is one of the deaths, the most memorable deaths in a movie ever.
It's really sad.
Every time, like,
as a kid, it would make me, like, really upset.
Every time it comes to it, I just want to turn off the movie for like 20 minutes and then come back. Like, it really affects me. I can't think of another character that dies in a movie that affects me as much.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the, you know, hard-hitting deaths in movies, I think. Maybe most, like, shocking or surprising.
He's just so charismatic in the movie. And I've really never felt that Anthony Edwards is like that in anything else I've ever seen him in. I mean, he was basically a knot on the log during his time in ER. But, I mean, he's just so, like, just charismatic in this movie, and you just love him, and he just seems like somebody that you would want to be hanging out with just all the time.
Yeah, and it helps that he's, like, playing against these alpha males, like, with Val Kilmer and Tom Cruise, like, you're talking about, like, A-list, like, movie star charisma, and he's kind of like the every guy. Like, he's kind of like that funny... like, he's got kind of just the guy next door type of appeal that you like. And I think that helps a lot. And it makes his death even more impactful.
Cruise and Val Kilmer both have a very serious demeanor, you know, just all the time. They're just very kind of straight. That's why it was such a kind of a turn whenever Tom Cruise played that character in Tropic Thunder. Because, you know, he's generally known as that pretty serious, kind of straight-laced type.
Well, he's always intense.
Very intense.
Tom Cruise is, like, every role he plays, like you're saying, and some of his best roles are that, like, intense role. So, like, yeah, I agree with you 100%. And, yeah, I'm trying to think.
Even the sad music here is really good, you know?
Yeah, it's good. For sure. It's a good soundtrack, like you said.
So, is there... I'm trying to think, is this the most shocking or, like, death that impacts you the most? I'm trying to think of one that would be worse than this.
I can't think of one because...
Turner and Hooch.
When the dog dies.
Yeah, but, I mean, what makes this so impactful is the grief afterwards. You know, like, it shows him grieving for, like, the next 15 minutes of the film. And when I even think about it, like... I don't know if I could fly after, like, my best friend and partner, you know, died. I mean, like, if one of you guys died, like, I don't know if I could keep on flying.
I'd want you to, Gabe.
You would?
I would want you to throw my dog tags out into the ocean and keep going.
Though I've got an issue with that. We'll get to that. What about Jenny and Forrest Gump?
No. I think everybody was pretty happy.
Oh, dang.
I wouldn't even say that girl in Titanic or Leo in Titanic, because like everybody's mad that she wouldn't let him up on her float.
Yeah, people are more mad at her. Right, exactly.
Like, I was mad when Leo died in Titanic. Like, that's what I went to. I know Wes really appreciates that, because it was sad that Leo died, and I really grew to like him.
Yeah, I didn't like that, but, you know, we're going to eventually do a Titanic episode, because that'll be a ruckus for sure. But
maybe when the Beast dies and Beauty and the Beast and becomes like that human, like that's a memorable death. I don't know.
Well, he's not Bambi. No, we're talking about like Bambi. Sad. Yeah, Bambi's. Yeah, that's a good one.
Bambi's mom.
Like sad. Bambi's mom. I like that one. Not that I like it happen. You know what I'm saying?
No, I think you lie. I think you had something against Bambi's mom.
I can't think of a more memorable death.
Well, maybe we'll have to keep thinking.
Come back to that one, yeah.
This is definitely one of the tops for sure.
Actually, you know what? That's a good thing. If you're listening to this, write in. What's the most memorable death? Write us an email. Tell us about it.
Get us an email.
Give us an email. Memorable deaths. There we go.
We're gonna have like 40 talk. People that have been in the Navy and Air Force that are gonna, you know, let us know how wrong we are, and then one person will be like, yeah, I'll shoot them an email about the best death. So can't wait to get those emails going.
Memorable death. Fredo from Godfather Part 2? I hope people have seen all these movies and are really spoiling them.
All right, are we ready for the last sequence here?
Let's go for it.
All right, here we go. So, although the Board of Inquiries clears Maverick of responsibility for Guth's death, he is overcome by guilt and can't continue. Charlie and others attempt to console him, but Maverick feels he's done being a pilot. He seeks advice from Viper, who reveals that he served with Maverick's father, Duke Mitchell, and was in the air battle in which Mitchell was killed. Contrary to official reports, which faulted Mitchell, Viper reveals classified information that proves Mitchell died heroically and informs Maverick that he can succeed if he can regain his self-confidence. Maverick chooses to graduate, though Iceman wins the Top Gun trophy. As fate would have it, right during the graduation, the best of the best Top Gun pilots get reassigned to the Enterprise. Iceman and Hollywood are launched to intercept a pair of MiGs, but are jumped by four additional enemy fighters. Hollywood is shot down and Iceman hopelessly surrounded when Maverick is finally launched. Now he's with with Merlin as his RIO. Almost immediately, Maverick flies into one of the MiG's jet wash, briefly stalling out. And though he regains control, he flashes back to Goose's death and breaks off, leaving Iceman by himself. Merlin desperately and furiously yells at Maverick to get back into the battle. Then, like a light switch flipping on, Maverick pulls himself together and returns to assist Ice. They destroy four MiGs, prompting the remaining squadron to retreat. As a result, Maverick and Iceman finally become friends. As a reward for his heroism, Maverick is offered any assignment he chooses. He chooses to be an instructor at Top Gun. He tosses Goose dog tags into the ocean, signifying he's come to terms with his friend's death. At a bar, Maverick hears the Righteous Brothers, "You've lost that loving feeling," and Charlie appears, signifying they'll give their romance chance. A lot of stuff that I just went through there, but it's really just Maverick kind of getting back in, graduating Top Gun, and then the big final fight. So what did you guys think about the ending of Top Gun, or the climax and ending of Top Gun?
Boom. This is what I'm talking about. get him back up flying. Let's bring in the true badass of the movie, Merlin. I'm sad about Goose, but it's time we got Merlin back up in there to do some magic in the air.
Merlin is truly ridiculous in this last sequence. He is like, keeps looking around and like freaking out in the back. It is awful. What is he
doing?
You're
gonna do what?
Yeah, he's like, what?
He's charisma, baby. He's up there keeping stuff in line. Man, I get so excited when Merlin comes back. Sad about
Merlin
Goose.
Is
excited
awful.
About Merlin.
No, nobody likes Merlin. I'm glad. Anyway, I actually have a real issue with this ending here. All right, so a couple things. First, so I want to go back to what you're saying. First off, how the hell is Tom Cruise even in the running for Top Gun? I don't know. He seems like he should be in last place. The other thing is, so they have the ceremony, and Tom, of course, I do like where he's not. He can't decide whether he wants to go or not or finish. He does decide, and everybody's happy to see him. And then, they have this issue in the Indian Ocean, and they have to go and I think like rescue a boat or something. From what I read, it was actually based on a real incident in the Indian Ocean. But my issue is that, so are there no other pilots that can go to this? The Navy has hundreds of pods, but here's the thing about Top Gun. It's like a continuous training school. Like, it's not like this is just a one-time event. Like, it happens all the time. And so they obviously have other Top Guns out there also that are just as good as these guys. And they also have multiple aircraft carriers in the oceans, many fighter pilots, hundreds throughout.
That doesn't make for a good movie, Tommy.
Why are they calling this one group is like, we got to have you guys fly hundreds of miles, right now to go fight. Like,
thousands.
It makes no sense.
Because they're in San Diego. Top Gun was in San Diego.
Yeah,
and now
thousands.
They're headed out to the Indian Ocean.
These aircraft carriers would already have pilots.
They're just waiting for that one class to finally get done. Gosh, we need some pilots.
Yeah, it makes it sound like the Navy truly has like 8 pilots. And like, it's like, well, guys, you got to go. It's time to go.
What are the odds? Like, the day after graduation, they need these people. I honestly don't know, Tommy. But on a serious note, I do like the story between Viper and Maverick about his dad saving everybody. I do think that's the best dialogue in the movie. And I do like, I actually really like when it comes full circle and he's like, I'll fly. If you can't find somebody to fly, I'll fly with you anytime. I do like that person, that part.
It's really well done. Honestly, this last segment
is great.
It's really exciting.
Yeah,
I know you didn't like the middle, Tommy, or Maverick, but this part is good, the way that they did it, I think.
Yeah, honestly, after the middle sequence with that volleyball stuff and the sex, all of that, after that, the movie gets really good. And the whole like last 45 minutes is good. So I think that's really where it kind of picks up steam.
The part where Maverick just walks over and starts pulling on that missile before he gets in the plane, and he's like, hey, well, that missile didn't fall off, so I should be good to go.
He's very rigorous in his pre-flight check pattern, right?
What if he was yanking on that missile and he just fell off? It just blew up the aircraft carrier.
Killed everybody.
He's like, man.
Be like, you're not supposed to pull on the missiles, sir.
This is why you were in last place in the Top Gun. So I got to say, also, another thing we have mentioned is, man, those outfits look so good. Those white, like, outfits, good grief. I want to join the Navy.
I just want to get the outfit. Like, if I ever am single again, I'm just going to get that outfit.
Just pretend you were a fighter pilot?
Yeah, just walk around with that white on, man. People will just be like, wow. And they won't even look at how old I look now.
Yeah.
They'll just be looking at that clean press.
How
white
old are you?
There.
The oldest fighter pilot ever.
Well, I'll just tell them I'm one of the instructors.
Now you're an instructor. Hell yeah. But then you'll, here's the thing. Hopefully they don't know anything, because if we talk like we did tonight, they'll find out real fast. We don't know shit.
True. Hey, one thing we haven't mentioned, and I got to bring this up, is the best call signs, Hollywood and Wolfman. Now, that is a great call sign pair right there. I love that. Hollywood and Wolfman.
I hate Jester. I mean, that's just like Jester.
Jester's not very good, yeah.
Like, where do you, are you a jokester? You know, the best is clearly Merlin, duh.
No,
you know,
Merlin's off. Merlin's awful. He's Goose got great is awful.
He's got great sayings, too. He's like you're going to do what?
Yeah, I love that. Like, what in the
I'm
world?
I'm going to slow down and they'll fly right by. You're going to do what?
What? And then he's like, keeps looking around. Like, he is freaking out in that back.
Oh, man.
Like, have you ever flown before? Like, you do know this is your job, right?
I bet Merlin doesn't get one of those cool white suits. I bet he doesn't, you know?
Oh, definitely no not. Merlin is not a white suit type of guy.
He probably wears a cape and, like, some stuff and a hat.
I think the only reason that Maverick, like, picked him to, you know, to continue on with him is because, you know, he found out he's actually 6'5", and Maverick wants to get back into some volleyball.
Yeah.
Yeah, he needs a – exactly.
He needs to get dirty before his dates.
It's sweaty, and then he has to take a shower.
Stinky.
At the date's house.
Yeah.
Man, Maverick is creepy as hell. He just follows women into bathrooms, shows up, asks to take a shower at their house. Good grief.
Anyway, you know, it does come full circle with Maverick and Iceman, and Iceman ends up saying, you know, you can be my wingman anytime. But it's since...
Bullshit, you can be mine.
Bullshit, you can be mine. That's and I do That's love good. That sequence yeah. at the end, but what actually happens is... Tommy, I'm your wingman. I'm Merlin. We're wingmen. How do you feel about that?
What? No, we're not.
No, wingmen. I'm not your wingman. Oh, I'm your backman. I'm even closer than your wingman.
I'm your backman.
I'm your backman.
You are my backman. That's true.
I mean, better than Iceman.
It goes pretty well because we do become, you know, heroes.
Yeah.
I mean, we're probably on like the cover of Time magazine or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. All right, Gabe. Yeah.
See, that's
there
why
we go,
I mean,
Merlin.
Merlin, we knew what we were doing the whole time.
I'm your back man.
I'm your back man. I'm like, you know, you're like the in the those horse costumes. You're like the head of the horse. I'm the butt of the horse. Right. That's me.
All right, I like it, man. What the hell?
It's taking a weird turn.
It has,
as it always does.
No, it always does, and. But I got to say, the last sequence is really, really well done. Really awesome. A lot of cool, you know, just fight sequences. And I know we've already talked about it. There's only so many ways you can say this, but, you know, the flight sequences in this last sequence
Incredible.
Are really well done. Yeah. But I do have another thing real quick to say. A couple it, issues is, why would Maverick throw his dog tags out? I don't get that. Either you keep them or, like, you give them to the family. You just threw them in the water. It's like, screw this.
I think it was supposed to be, like, he was, like, supposed to be an interpretation of he's letting him go because he hadn't been able to do so. But you're right.
Maybe Meg his Ryan's son
gonna
would like him.
Meg Ryan's going to want those dog tags. His 5-year-old son that's in a bar with him while he's playing piano is probably going to want those.
Hey, now he's got some like flounder or something that's all tied up in him, trying to swim around. It's got dog tags on him.
Yeah, what the hell? I know the Goose's son is going to be in the new Maverick, so he's probably pissed about that. He's like,
I hope
man,
he brings it up.
Why did you throw my dad's dog tags in the ocean? Like what?
And that's good.
It just makes no sense. But anyway, it doesn't make any sense. So.
We keep referencing it, so I thought I'd get it in before we end the episode. So the pilot that died's name was Art Scholl, and he was 53 when he died, and he was an American aerobatic pilot, aerial cameraman, and flying instructor for a long time.
Did it say,
time.
Gabe, how he died? Like, what sequence?
He died in the same way that that the Goose died. It says he died during the filming of Top Gun 2, when his Pitts S2 camera plane failed to recover from a spin, and it was due to jet wash and plunged into the Pacific Ocean.
Wow. That's awful. Crazy.
Yeah, that's sad. I mean, that just shows you.
I did not know that. I'm going to look into this as soon as we're done recording.
it shows you just how intense those flight sequences really are. I know another guy they have on set. So if you guys remember the date when they first meet Kelly McGillis and that older guy that she's with, from what I read, that is also one of the test pilots. Like, he is like one of the most well-known. So that he had like a little cameo in there.
He looks like Paul Hogan.
He does look like him, right? And but yeah, he's also one of the main test pods, from my understanding.
They said he could fly anything. Like, they're going through like all the different things. This article is actually pretty cool. Yeah. So, what a superstar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they had some amazing pilots on this. Another thing, you know, we didn't mention, which I read about, was that the plot of Top Gun was actually based on a magazine article that I believe either the screenwriters or maybe Jerry Bruckheimer, one of them, read. I think it was in a magazine called California Quarterly or something, and it was about the Top Gun school in Miramar, in kind of just the competition, and they decided to, of course, write a movie around that. So I thought that was interesting. They just thought of it through a magazine article.
Yeah, you didn't need much of a script for it. I mean, it is a lot of, but people like Art Scholl made those fight scenes like worth it, you know, to watch. Like, you watch those fight scenes, and they're a lot of the movie. So
absolutely,
that's why there's not a lot of dialogue to talk about with this, you know.
No, it's a true like action block, but like, right, the plot is kind of beside the point. You got to have big movie stars. You got to have a really skilled director. You know, you've got to have a really good director that can pull this off. And like you said, Gabe, a lot of those stunts. And then you've got to have like Jerry Bruckheimer and Don Simpson. You know, that's another two guys we haven't really mentioned. You know, those two guys produced it, and this kind of kickstarted their like decade of all of those action extravaganzas they made together.
And you need some Zima.
And a hell of a lot of Zima. I'm pretty sure that was flowing like water on the set.
Like sweat. Yeah.
Well, I think that's it for tonight's episode. Anything, any final thoughts or closing thoughts on Top Gun?
No, as much as I tease about it, and as much as a lot of people will say it's not a perfect film, I love this film. I do. Like, I've seen it. You know, what I'm starting to realize, like, I recently admitted Jurassic Park was my favorite movie. Movies that I watch over and over again, those are my favorite films. So this is one of my favorite films.
Yeah, and I would say, yeah, I think that makes sense, Gabe. I think for me, you know, this is not one I watched a lot growing up, but I did enjoy rewatching it just from the goofy 80s aspect of it. And then kind of in the second half, it actually gets quite good. So, yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun to rewatch, and glad we could do this episode. It's a true, you know, it's also one of those movies, and I think that's another thing we didn't really kind of talk about, but and we can save it for another episode, is, you know, it's one of those movies where you take a star like Tom Cruise, who before this movie was like kind of well known. People liked him. He'd had a hit with Risky Business, and like overnight, he literally was an A-list movie star. Mm-hmm. And so it's just very rare when you get those type of movies. You know, you get Leo in Titanic, like we talked about earlier, Harrison Ford in Star Wars, Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. It just doesn't happen that often. And this is just one of those for sure. But yeah, rewatching was a lot of fun, and I'm pretty excited for the new one. We'll have to definitely review the new one in a reviewing the new episode in a few weeks and kind of compare it to this one.
Yep. Go out and support it.
No, that sounds great. No, I've always liked Top Gun. Both of these guys know that it's a favorite of mine. I remember I was probably 8 to 10 years old. I guess it was whenever Top Gun first hit syndication. My uncle recorded it on a VHS tape, and I was over at their house, and he showed it to me. And I just had not seen, number one, very many movies at that time, and much less, you know, non-cartoon movies. And he showed it to me, and I just loved it. Even then, we sat down and watched the whole movie, and I've liked it ever since then. And yes, it's got a bunch of fun stuff to question and make fun of and stuff, but it's one of those movies that you just don't get a lot of these days. that are like it. And it's always a fun revisit. And of course, looking forward to showing Liam, my son, one day as we can sit down and, you know, I'll just make sure I tell him the appropriate attire for volleyball.
Yes.
Heck and, yeah.
All right. Well, audience, we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new episode. I'm not for sure exactly what we've got planned next. There's a couple of things in the works, but we will be bringing you something that hopefully will be worth your listen. As always, you know, we would love for you to interact with us. You can find us on a variety of social media platforms. If you come over to our Facebook page, Real Talk a Movie Podcast, that's generally where we do the most interacting with people. And we really like that we're kind of at a point now where the group is starting to kind of carry itself. You know, a lot of listeners and friends, you know, they'll post stuff and bring things up. And we love all that. So we'd love to see you over in our Facebook group. We're on Twitter at Real_cast. That's R-E-E-L. We're on Instagram, Real Talk a Movie Podcast.
Don't forget that TikTok, Real Talk Tick, TICTOK.
I forgot we even had one. So there you go.
West
hey, Merlin's advice here. Find us on TikTok.
Who has followed us on TikTok, Gabe? Do we have any followers?
Yeah, we got lots. One video has like 700 views. Don't worry about it, Tommy.
Heck yeah. Merlin's all right.
He's got it taken.
Merlin's care. Got it. Heck yeah. I knew we were trending on Twitter. Wait, TikTok? What the hell TikTok. Are we talking about?
I misspelled TikTok, though, so ignore that during when you look for us. TICTOK.
You're looking for us, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we've got the email address. You know, I'm not even going to give it to you. If you really want to email, you'll find it somewhere out there. and sincerely, audience, we always thank you for listening and making Real Talk possible. And for us, that's a wrap.